Humidity 55%, officially at the airport, partly cloudy, 61 degrees. Jerry Hoffman, WoWo News, and now is a part of WOWO's continuing efforts to keep you, the voter, informed in these final weeks before Election Day. We present a special broadcast of WoWo Summit Conference. This evening, our guest on Summit Conference is Dan Quayle, Republican candidate for the House of Representatives. This is Summit Conference. Summit Conference is presented weekly at this time by the news department of WOWO to provide our Fort Wayne and Tri-State listeners a comprehensive look at events in the news and the views of people who make the news.
Good evening and welcome to Summit Conference. I'm your host, Linda Loesch, and this week's program is part of a series on the three candidates running for the office of 4th District Congressional Representative. With me this evening is the incumbent candidate, Republican Dan Quayle. Welcome to Summit Conference, Mr. Quayle.
Glad to be here, Linda.
Okay, let's get right into the main issue of this year's elections. According to your party, at least, tax cuts. Very generally, are you in favor of cutting taxes?
Yes, I am. Tax cuts has been an issue that not only myself, but generally the Republican Party has been speaking about for the last 2 years. Tax cuts hopefully will be a reality. It's something that I feel that has been long overlooked by the Congress and also by the President. The failure of the Congress to understand and to perceive the ascendancy of the middle class in America is one of the things that we must deal with, because the middle class is basically overtaxed. They're getting into higher income with the progressive income tax rates. They're paying more taxes. You have an inflation factor that's taking away their money. And what is happening is an individual, woman or man, working, earns more money but takes home a net loss. And I'll explain how that happens. The way it happens is, say somebody earns $10,000 and they get a $500 increase. Well, they're going to be in a little bit higher income tax bracket. We have inflation right now around 10%, anywhere from 8 to 10%. And next year, we're going to have an increase in Social Security taxes. And this increase in Social Security tax, coupled with a higher tax rate, coupled with inflation, that individual's purchasing power is going to be less. So, yes, we do need to focus on tax cuts for the middle-income people particularly, because I feel that the American taxpayer is overburdened. And coupled with tax cuts, we also have to talk about a reduction in federal spending. You've got to have the two. And I think that the message of Proposition 13 is loud and clear, that people do not want to pay high taxes and they do not want excessive, wasteful, fraudulent government spending.
The Republican Kemp Roth plan, which proposed to cut income taxes by one-third over the next 3 years, failed in the Senate recently. What other kinds of tax plans would you favor in the future?
The Kemp Roth did fail in the Senate, as it did in the House, but let me point out this, that the tax plan that was passed by the Senate and also by the House of Representatives is very similar to the Kemp Roth bill. And if it hadn't been for people like myself and Mr. Kemp and Mr. Roth and talking about tax cuts for the last 2 years and sort of yelling, we probably wouldn't have had this tax cut that we're having today. It is, I think, somewhat of a phenomenon that we were going into where President Carter 2 years ago was talking about three martini lunches and taking away interest payments on mortgages as part of tax reform. And now the whole country is talking about tax reform and giving the middle income taxpayer relief. That's what Kemp Roth and the Quayle bill is all about. And I think that we have succeeded, even though they didn't adopt our identical language, that we have succeeded in convincing not only the Congress, but the nation on how serious tax reform is.
Do you support the American Tax Reduction Plan by Howard Jarvis that proposes to cut income taxes by 50%?
I have not read the specifics of the Howard Jarvis plan. I would say that it's probably very similar in spirit and in scope of what I've been talking about for 2 years, so I'm sure that the theory and the direction is something that I could embrace, but I have not read it in detail.
You've mentioned that if these tax cuts take place, that there will have to be a cutback in federal spending. What kind of cutbacks do you feel are necessary?
When I talk about cutbacks, I like to talk about just restraint. Just restrain our spending. In other words, why not appropriate the same money to these agencies, National Defense, HEW, Transportation, HUD, OSHA, EPA, all, even the United States Congress, the White House, the same amount of bucks that we appropriated them last year. And then they're going to be forced, because of a little bit of inflation, to tighten the belt a little bit. But we don't have to cut any vital services, and we don't have to sit there and eradicate government completely, but if we would just practice fiscal restraint, and that would include probably about across the board a cut of anywhere from, say, 3 to 6% across the board, I think that you could move very quickly toward a balanced budget and hopefully be able to have President Carter meet his campaign pledge and balance it by 1980. But the way we're going, the budget keeps increasing. The budget was up this last year 8 or 9%. Well, you can't increase it 8 or 9% and expect to achieve a balanced budget because the economy is not expanding that fast.
The Black Congressional Caucus and other black leaders have said that these kind of tax cuts will cut human services programs like welfare and aid to dependent children and other similar programs. You say that's not going to happen?
No, that's not going to happen. First of all, aid to dependent children and a number of welfare programs are what we call entitlement programs. By law, people are entitled to these programs. And when we set up the law, unless we change the law, then we have to fund it. And they are what we call uncontrolled budget items because we do not know how much money we're going to appropriate. We can't say that we're going to spend X billions of dollars on aid to dependent children or welfare because we don't know what the welfare situation is going to be. But in welfare, take welfare for example, since we're talking about that, there are GAO reports and a number of documentation that shows a great deal of fraud, abuse, mismanagement. We can eradicate this and get rid of that and save a lot of taxpayers' dollars. This is what we should focus on. And we haven't focused on it because it's sort of been polite to go along and spend as much money as any department agency wants. But now that we have Proposition 13, now that the American taxpayer is beginning to speak out, I think that you'll see a change in the attitude of Congress. I'm very hopeful. I've been saying this for the last 2 years. And I might just say that probably the most important thing about not only Proposition 13, but in my short 2 years in the United States Congress, is the realization that the American public, if it wants to, can communicate and can have influence upon the elected public officials. Because we have dramatically changed the picture in a short 2 years of what the attitude should be toward government and toward taxation. And it's not done just because I've been saying it or a number of us have been talking about it. It's because the American people have also been saying it. And so often you hear, oh, my vote doesn't count, or it doesn't really matter what I think because public officials don't pay any attention. But I think that you take Proposition 13, you see the real change that we've had in the last 2 years. The American people's input, the citizen input to their public servants and representatives, whether it's here in Fort Wayne or the 4th District or in Washington, they can have influence and they can have impact. And that's the American way, and I think that's part of what makes our system the best system that mankind has ever created.
Okay, Americans are telling you that they want tax cuts and looks like you're going to give it to them, or Congress will. And tax cuts encourage business to invest and they encourage individuals to save and to spend money. But how are you going to convince Americans that they have to help fight inflation too? Americans don't seem to be very willing to want to take cuts in wages or not see their wages go up as fast.
The thing that's going to convince the Americans the most, American citizens, is when we talk about not only tax cuts but reducing federal spending. But hey, when that inflation starts to hit home in their pocketbook and they go down to the grocery store and they see this, the price up, say, 10 or 12%, they're going to say, hey, you know, what's happening? Then they're going to realize, well, maybe we're responsible. If you're a business management person, maybe you know, the price is too high. Or maybe if you're part of an employee and the last demands that you made on management, maybe we were a bit excessive and maybe we ought to come together and have moderate restraints voluntarily on wage and prices. But I think that the most important thing that can be done to impress upon the American people that we need to seriously fight inflation, and the way we need to do it is to try to hold a reasonable levels, prices and wages voluntarily, is for the federal government to set an example. When the federal government and the Congress comes home and says, okay, you will suffer but not us, that is no example and the people aren't going to buy it. For example, what did Congress do just last year? They passed a 29% increase to themselves and to all the other federal bureaucrats. 29% increase. And yeah, they're telling the business sector and the private sector and the laborers and the management to say, hold down wages and prices. But we can't do that until we set an example ourselves. And I think that we have done a very poor job in that respect, and I think that not only the Congress but the President has got to realize that until we do set a good example and say, yes, we're serious about this, then we're not going to be able to have that kind of an impact that's necessary on the American economy and the American taxpayer.
Do you really feel that if people... Inflation's been rising by exorbitant amounts, and people haven't cut back. Do you really feel that just because prices will keep rising, that all of a sudden firefighters and the United Steelworkers and teachers will say, oh, well, then let's not strike this year. Let's just take a lower. Do you really feel that that's probable?
No, I don't have any way to look into a crystal ball and to say what the steel workers or what the UAW or what any particular group is going to do when they come to the wage settlements and to negotiate a contract. But let's put a little bit different perspective on the question of inflation. What is the cause of inflation? Let's ask ourselves, what is the cause of inflation? And I think that generally economists, respected economists, will say that the number one cause of inflation is government spending more money than the government takes in. In other words, the huge deficits and the huge national debt that the government has today, and that goes back to the example that I'm talking about, that the huge debt that the national government has today is the cause of inflation. So if we're really serious about stopping inflation, then we need to move dramatically toward a balanced budget, which we haven't done. We have a record three-year deficit in the history of the United States. The national debt is $800 billion. So I get back that if we're really serious about inflation, which I am, and I vote against all the budget resolutions because it's far too much spending, until we tighten our belt, until we say, yes, America, we have an inflation problem, and yes, the United States Congress and the President are willing to do something about it. And when I mean willing to do something about it, I mean tighten our own belts. And whether it's extravagant pay increases or extravagant spendings on expenditures on welfare or defense, whatever the case may be, that we need to take the lead in this. But we can't just say, you do it, steel workers, you do it, auto workers, you do it, business. That's not going to work. And so if you pinpoint the problem of inflation, it is deficit spending. So how to correct that is to move toward a balanced budget. And we have not done that. And I've been very critical of it, and it's probably one of the most frustrating things that I've encountered in the last 2 years. So no. Just by talking and jawboning, that's not going to happen. The American people are going to have to see specific action. And the specific action is going to have to be dramatic difference in attitude of the Congress and have a balanced budget.
Okay. Well, now that we're back to federal spending, I want to get back to a little bit more of what's going to be cut. As Congressman, as you know, you play a major role in getting federal grants for Fort Wayne and Allen County and other local governments in the 4th District. Would drastic tax cuts mean or make less grants available to local communities?
I would say that when you talk about across-the-board restraint on spending, which I have talked about, that there is a possibility that there will be less dollars flowing back to the local communities. But on the other hand, there'll be less dollars floating from the local communities to Washington because we're going to hold down spending and we're going to reduce taxes at the same time. I don't think some of the vital things, and I was very pleased, particularly after all the work that so many of us have done in getting the UDAG program for the downtown garage. I think this is vital to the downtown community of Fort Wayne and the revitalization of the downtown. So specifically, I don't think that you're going to see curtailment in worthwhile projects like that. But I think that you're going to have a sense of direction that is going to look toward cutting out the abuse, cutting out the waste, cutting out the fraud. And there are, believe me, there are a number of GAO reports that can show you on many, many government programs on where you need to eliminate and just have more efficient government. And you'll be able to reduce and be able to hold down federal spending. And this is what, and this is where the arena should be fought, is in trying to tighten the belt on the federal government, try to make it more efficient, make it more limited, and yet not curtail the vital services that we all need.
What do you see the future of the CETA program? Do you think that's going to stay around for a while?
The CETA program will probably stay around for a while. The authorization that's passed extends it for 3 years. But the CETA program has across the country has been abused. It was intended to get to those people that are hardcore unemployed, people that needed training to be able to have a job. It hasn't been used in that area. And when you start talking about government jobs, you're getting back to a philosophical argument that is going on in Congress. The philosophical argument is this: where should the employment be? Should it be in the public sector, or should it be in the private sector? I have been one of those that have championed the idea that we need the jobs in the private sector rather than the government sector. If you're going to rely and always go to the Congress for jobs, for employment, then who's going to be paying the bill in the future? Because the government right now, that I think it's one out of three or every four, are dependent in some way for income from the government. And we're moving dramatically in the direction where eventually someday it could be possible that all of us will be dependent on the government. Well, then we're in a very sad situation economically, politically, morally, as far as I'm concerned. So the CETA program, I think that you have to put it in its proper perspective. And where should the employment be? Plus the abuses that have happened in the past. But it's not going to be eliminated this year, probably for the next two or three years. But I would hope we'll be able to gradually get it back to those hardcore unemployed that businesses don't want to work with, that can't get a job in the private market, to focus just on that. And not to have people rely on government employment for the productivity, and to get back toward the philosophy that the employment should come from the majority in the private sector.
Okay, I'd like to break here for a minute and remind our listening audience that it is listening to Summit Conference on WOWO in Fort Wayne. And I'm Linda Loesch, talking to the incumbent candidate for the 4th District Congressional seat, Republican Dan Quayle. Mr. Quayle, one issue many Americans are concerned about is the cost of medical care, which has been rising faster than the rate of inflation. Do you feel these costs are rising unreasonably? And if so, what do you propose to curb that rise?
I think that the health care costs are rising at, and perhaps to paraphrase your words, maybe unreasonably. They are obviously ahead of inflation. Now, what do we do about it? What's the answer? It's not a simple answer. It's probably a problem that is equally as complex as the energy problem. And it's something that the Congress is no way could take on the energy problem and the health problem in one session. And I think that perhaps when we go back in January, that you will see the energy question, the energy problem, is the number one domestic issue, second to inflation and employment. I put the two together. Will be health. So what do we do? Do we have a comprehensive national health insurance program that Senator Kennedy is talking about, where it would be somewhat funded by a checkoff system like the Social Security system, and everybody will pay into it, and we will have virtually a free medical care for everyone? I don't think the American people are ready for that. I don't think that the American people would be for that if they knew all the encumbrances that the Kennedy plan would impose. And when I talk about the encumbrances, I would say that not only the cost that it would be, but I think you run the risk of having your quality of medical care to be reduced. National health insurance has been a failure, utter failure in Britain, and the Kennedy plan is very similar to that. So what do we do? Where do we go to stem the tide of rising health care costs? Of course, if we would reduce inflation, that would be an area that hospital costs and health care costs could come down to. I am one of those that believe that as we approach the cost, whether it's some sort of a hospital cost containment voluntary program, whether, and I favor a limited catastrophic health insurance program myself, I think that the people, particularly young families that are wiped out, whether it's an automobile accident or a serious illness and can't afford it, shouldn't be forced into servitude for the rest of their lives to pay off for some unfortunate accident or some unfortunate illness that strikes their family. This would probably only relate to maybe 5 or 8% of the population, because most people are covered through their health insurance programs that they have right now in the catastrophic area. But there are those that can't, and those that are not, the government, I think, has a moral obligation and responsibility to take care of those. But when you get beyond that, I am one of those that believe that when you take a person and to have, if you had total free medical care, no matter what, I say, first of all, you risk the quality of care. You risk being able to even dig it into a hospital because everyone would decide that they're sick. That I think when somebody is sick or they're injured, that when they go into that hospital or to get that care, that they should have to pay something, even if it's $10 or $15 or $20 or $25, whatever number, because then they're going to be forced to make a decision do I need medical care? Do I need it? Now then, if it's free, well, you'll go down and say, well, you know, I'm free, you owe it to me, I want this, this, and this. So we need to have the consumer, the patient, to make intelligent decisions. And we also need to have the doctors, and I think one of the reasons that you have such high costs right now because of the malpractice suits. They have to have every single test and all sorts of experts to document why they have done some surgical procedure or some medical procedure because of a possibility of a malpractice suit. And malpractice insurance, as you know, has just skyrocketed, and this cost goes into paying for the doctors. So what are we going to do in that area? You know, making the patient to force the patient to make a conscientious decision on whether they need health care, and then forcing, you know, having the doctors on the end make intelligent decisions on what kind of health care. It's a tremendously complex area, but something that we have to be concerned about, because my congressional poll that I took last year, I put four questions on this because I was very interested in health care. And the first question I said, do you feel health care costs are too high? And the answer came back, and I can't remember the exact statistics, but the answer came back 95% yes. The health care costs are too high, and 5%, I presume the doctor said that they weren't. Then the next question was, are you in favor, or do you feel that you're getting quality health care? And the answer came back 75, 76% said yes, well, we were getting good health care. I think 10% said no, and the other 10 or 15% were undecided. And then the next question I asked, I said, are you for a national mandatory health insurance program? And the answer to that was about 65-70% no, that they didn't want that. And then the fourth question I said, are you in favor of a limited catastrophic health insurance program? And the answer to that was yes, about 60-75%. So it was a very, very interesting. People saying, yes, we're paying too much, but yes, we're getting good health care. No, we don't want the mandatory and the government-run total health insurance, but yes, catastrophic health insurance we do want. So where do we go from there? And it's, as I said, it's an exceedingly complicated area, probably equally as complicated as energy, but I think it could probably replace energy next year on the congressional agenda to try to work out some sort of a problem.
You're putting an awful lot of the blame on the American people and not much on the medical profession, don't you? You said something about voluntary guidelines. It seems if medical costs have risen that much, or so much in the last few years, that voluntary guidelines are good. Don't you think something has to be done to the doctors and the hospitals?
I think that when you talk about guidelines, and you have got to come in and say, okay, where are you going to cut? Where are the costs? Are it in salaries to the doctors, or is it in just administrative costs? Is it the Medicare, Medicaid program? Where are the extravagant costs? Nobody can really seem to answer that. If you want to come in and say, well, I think that no doctor should make over $50,000 a year, I would say, well, I don't know if I'd agree with that. I don't know if we should come in and say, you know, such and such person should only make so much a year. If you do that and you start regulating doctors, well, maybe we ought to regulate news reporters too, or regulate lawyers, or regulate anything as far as salary. So I think what you need to do, you got to find out the problem. What is the problem? What is the problem? Is the problem because government regulation, which costs a tremendous amount of money on hospitals just to comply with government regulations? If we would have less regulation, we would have lower hospital costs. But yet, on the other hand, to make sure that we have good health care, you need a certain amount of regulation. I mean, the answer is not simple, and I'm not placing the blame or responsibility on any one sector. I'm asking the question, and I ask the rhetorical question because I don't know myself. And I don't think that the Congress knows, because we would have been dealing in somewhat of a direction, and it just floundered this health insurance approach this year. So we don't have all the facts, and we've got to find the facts. And when we get the facts and have a consensus of opinion, then I think that we can have a viable health insurance program.
Okay. I think we're going on time here. We're just about running out of time. I've been talking with Dan Quayle, who is the incumbent for the 4th District Congressional seat, a Republican. And that's it for Summit Conference this week. For the WoWo Newsroom, I'm Linda Loesch.
This has been Summit Conference, a comprehensive look at events in the news and the views of the people who make the news. This has been a WOWO News presentation. You've been listening to a special rebroadcast of WoWo Summit Conference featuring Dan Quayle, Republican candidate for the seat in the House of Representatives from Indiana's 4th Congressional District.